With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to episode 83 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I am your host, Kofi Outlaw, and with me today is my co-host, Matthew Aguilar.
What up?
We've brought back for the second time this week, Mr. Turnup Charlie Ridgely himself.
Hello.
And over in our in the cut seat is our gaming guru, Mr. Tanner Dedman.
Hello.
And we've dragged Tanner out here because this is a good cross-section day. We have a big kind of arrival in the realms of Star Wars and gaming with the arrival of Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, which Tanner's going to break down and review for us. But we're also going to be talking about a lot of other stuff. We have some DC stuff we got to get through today. We got some Disney stuff we got to talk about. We have some Marvel comics in our latest in the X-Men relaunch line to kind of discuss and break down with Fallen Angels. And we have a new grenade today, so people have been asking for it. We've got another one, and I'm pretty sure this one's a good one to, this one will be explosive, if nothing else. If not here, then definitely with the fan. So let's get into all of that by jumping into our news flash segment. And we're going to start with a big kind of surprise announcement we got today, which is Dwayne The Rock Johnson is never shy to be promoting that next movie that he's going to be doing, and today he kind of finally has crashed into the world of DC, because after being in limbo for I don't know how long, pretty much as long as I've been doing this, The Rock has finally confirmed that we are getting this Black Adam movie.
It has a date!
It has a date of, it's right pre-Christmas in 2021, and it's going to be directed by Kwame Collet-Serra. I don't know how exactly you say his name. I'm not going to butcher it. I'm not into like exact French pronunciations anymore. But it's the guy who did Nonstop, the airplane, the Liam Neeson airplane movie.
Oh, yeah,
movie.
Okay. Yeah.
He did the Blake Lively, The Shallows.
Oh.
Yeah, he did Run All Night, another like Liam Neeson, Joel Kinnaman, Run Across Manhattan movie. So he kind of makes like B-movie thrillers or what he makes, and now he's going to be making the jump to superhero movie, which, I mean, this is kind of the playbook, right? You get somebody who's been doing some solid work in the genre, in a genre kind of capacity, like they did with David F. Sandberg for Shazam, or...
James Gunn's a great example. He only made, like, B, like, genre horror films before, and super. You know, like, all low-budget little stuff before Guardians, so...
Sarah has been making more than just low-budget.
Right,
he's been making these modest-budget action movies that actually earn a lot of money and do well at the box office, even if they don't get the highest cinema, like, you know, critic scores. So he's going to be taking on Black Adam. That's the director. That's the date. And we got a piece of concept art with a combination of, Jim Lee and Boss Logic. Boss Logic.
Kudos, friend, Boss Logic,
yeah,
by
friend
the way.
Of comic book.com, Boss Logic, coming up big in this industry.
It's awesome.
And, you know, I'm happy that we've helped promote that, you know, like, We've had a crazy amount of Boss Logic. Anybody who's worked here has had to go in and organize our Boss Logic gallery of images.
Boy, remember that every single one?
That was a beast.
Add the
man.
New ones at the top, and there was like 100.
Yeah, because of our broke ass system here at comicbook.com, our CMS, we had to manually update his gallery every time, which meant like every time we put in a new photo, we had to go back through and reorder the hundreds of Boss Logic images we had collected. And yeah, it was like
a couple times a week.
Yeah, it was a lot. It's because we've just been big fans of his, and so I mean it's all come around. I mean he did official Avengers Endgame stuff, which was a big breakout.
He got a shout out on Fallon that really blew up.
Yeah, exactly.
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yep. Yeah. And now he's doing official DC concept art with Jim Lee.
Yeah,
that's pretty good. I mean it doesn't get much better than that. So congrats to Boss Logic, and I mean it's well deserved because this image of what The Rock will look like as Black Adam was pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say. I mean it's just concept art. But it looks like he's going full costume, cape, everything. And I was worried about the cape because...
Were you?
Yeah, I mean, I want him to have the cape. I wanted this to be kind of whimsical superhero. He would just look like a wrestler without it.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that they have it.
Counterpoint, more wrestlers should have capes.
absolutely agree with this.
Yeah, I mean,
also more Power Rangers should have capes. No. Like, anybody should have capes. Like, capes are awesome.
My desk chair has a cape.
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's been some question about WWE's costuming practices recently.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so we're
going to
get into that.
Yeah, buddy.
So we're going to get this Black Adam movie in. They're going to go with the kind of modern Black Adam take, which is that he's kind of like the Namor of magic in the sense that he's gone from villain to anti-hero, but he's just like a bad attitude kind of anti-hero.
Yeah.
Who kind of is very kind of regal and above it all. He's Namor, basically.
Yeah, honestly, I wasn't kidding when I was like, that's a great description. Yeah. That is spot on. He is exactly like that.
So in the whole mythos about how he became Black Adam and the magic in the world that he came from before becoming this mystical hero. So I'm excited to see The Rock jump into this. Hopefully it's going to be more kind of like Shazam than it is like Scorpion King, but
I think so, right? Yeah. I think The Rock has learned over the years.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not hate. Don't get me beat up. I mean, that
style. That
Brandon Davis will come in here and swing something at me.
That
but,
wink and a nod meta style gets way more receptive by audiences. So
yeah, I mean, I'm psyched for this. You guys, I mean, I didn't think this was happening. Like,
this
I
came honestly, out of nowhere.
Nowhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought this was in limbo. I mean, all the people out there, scoopers, are now like, I told you it was happening. No, you didn't. We all thought this was in limbo. Like, we thought Shazam 2 would happen first, and then there was going to be a Black Adam movie. But it's all been all over the place. Like I said, this has been going on for like the 10 years I've been doing this, so I'm just happy to see this come to fruition somehow, some way.
I am a little surprised that DC is going to do 3 movies in a year at this point. I mean, obviously in the future, that's what you want to get to. But just with kind of the struggles recently, and they kind of reworked it to be like director-driven, you know, creator-driven, smaller movies, you know, that not all big connect. And these probably won't connect. But 2021 has Batman, The Suicide Squad, and now Black Adam on the same year. And that year, we have 4 MCU movies. And so it's going to be a really, really, really crowded year in 2021.
The best year. I mean,
it might be great. That's what I'm saying. It's going to be really crowded.
But here's the thing. Does it stay that way? Do you see a movie like Batman, which, you know, still, like, do you see that maybe getting bumped?
Batman won't get bumped back. If anything, it'll get bumped forward.
Okay.
I don't think Batman's going to get bumped back.
No.
They're for once on the right track with Batman.
Yeah, and I think all of these projects are on separate enough lanes that there are,
honestly, it feels like Suicide Squad could be earlier because that movie's like all the way into production.
Well, and like Wonder Woman, they moved it more as a, like, just to give us a little extra time. Yeah. The date sounded good to them. Like, most of the stuff's done. Like, a lot of these
are
honestly,
you look at Black, like, you look at Dwayne Johnson, look at, you know, his Christmas has always been, like, he had both Jumanji movies are Christmas releases. And the first Jumanji movie crushed, even in the wake of Star Wars, did really, really, really well. So they immediately said, okay, let's do the second Jumanji movie at Christmas again. And now it's like, well, now let's do it another 2 years later and, you know, go with, because even though it's Warner Brothers, not Sony, it's still his production company. It's still $7 production, like, working on it. So it's, you know, let's put it at this slot where we found Dwayne as a brand to be successful.
Yeah. And Christmas is just a lucrative.
Yeah. It's just a
great win. Obviously. So. And it's the only downside is it comes on the heels of the first Avatar sequel. It comes like right around the same time.
Avatar sequel, but like no Star Wars, no real superhero movie that I can think of at that time.
No, the most recent one before that will be November, and it'll be Thor Love and Thunder.
Thor Love and Thunder, yeah, which kind of similar, but not really. So that'll be good. So it is going to be like the clear superhero movie contender for that window. So, and it's The Rock, so, you know, it's already got a built-in worldwide audience. So I wonder just how much of the underperformance of Shazam affected this change, like, were they willing to invest in a Shazam 2, or did they just move the smart move, which I would have made, which is let's get something guaranteed like The Rock, bolster this franchise, and then come back in a Shazam 2 that has The Rock. And then
I think there's an element of that to it. I mean, I think the underperformance wasn't a giant failure, you know, especially because the critic reviews were so solid and the audience reaction was so high. I mean, it's still a business at the end of the day, and so it didn't make a ton of money. So, I mean, obviously there was some.
But I think that's the most puzzling part about Shazam is that it was so well reviewed. It was so well, like, critics loved it for the most part, and it still couldn't find an audience. So I think that was, I agree. Like, I agree with Kobe. I think that's the money decision here is to go with, well, people like that. Let's stay on that track because that's the right track. But we need something that can command automatic money. And
the other thing, too, that I mentioned earlier, like, The Rock is maybe the busiest actor in Hollywood with his producing, and he's in a million movies, and he always has a new project coming out. Like, if Warner Brothers and New Line got like, hey, we have this like couple of month window where we can shoot and release, and it's like, well, we have to take it because we don't know how busy he's going to be post that. We don't know what else is going to go on. Like, we have a window, we're going to do it, even if we plan on doing Shazam 2 first, or if we reshuffled, whatever. Like, if The Rock has an opportunity and he's willing to do it, like,
do it.
You got to say yes and do it.
I mean, there is a certain amount of logic to that, but if there's also, like I said, this thing has been ongoing for 10 years and he's had time in that. So I feel like there, it could be, it doesn't have to be mutually exclusive. I think it could just be all things coming together at once. The Rock was available. They need some way to spin this franchise around. It all could be meeting, or they just threw some dump truck full of money on the table and they were like, now you have time.
Yeah, that's true.
And he's like, The Rock always has time for money. So that'll do it. Black Adam, we'll keep you, now that we'll be covering this for the next couple years, we'll be keeping you guys updated about what the story is, who else joins this, and like everything else about it. So stay tuned for that. We're going to move right along, not from the DC Universe, just to another corner of the DC Universe, really. So we're going to go from talking about kind of the more DCEU stuff with Black Adam to talking about where we are with these DC standalones, because Joker 2... And this is why we brought Charlie back, because Charlie was here for the infamous Joker episode where he took a Arthur Fleck-like stand against this movie, even though the rest of us were praising it. You know, some of you stand with Charlie, as you've let me know in hashtags and such.
Oh, really? But,
No, not really.
Oh.
No, I'm just kidding. There have been a couple of those.
Oh, no, I was curious.
There's been a couple of those.
I'll stand alone on this island.
That's fine. There's been a couple I stand with Charlie, and people agreed with Charlie, which is why I made that episode good. But Charlie! So, already we're here and talk about Joker 2, which was already being speculated about before the movie came out. Todd Phillips kind of made this offhand remark that the only way he would ever do a sequel is if he and Joaquin Phoenix kind of agreed on the ideas, and that they had tossed around some ideas of how it could continue, and so on and so forth. Now, Joker's here. It's going to be a $1 billion success, it looks like. It's the most profitable comic book movie of all time.
It's got so little to make.
Yeah, exactly. But that's how you make profits.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's
all
awesome.
Of you.
Yeah.
So,
I'm so disappointed in all of you.
Why? So I mean, at this point, you're obviously on the wrong side. I mean, there's no right or wrong, but the majority side.
I do think, as much as I don't like this movie, I am happy that a comic book movie that is so different than the norm is successful. I think that is
great. Well, that was then. Now we're talking about franchising it, which is not different at all from the norm. So, Joker 2 discussions are already happening. Todd Phillips is kind of trying to downplay this and just like, oh, Lord, but...
Yeah, because he really doesn't say like, oh, yeah, we're working on a sequel. He just kind of dances around.
Well, let's see. Let's read what he says. Todd Phillips said, talking to Los Angeles Times, but it couldn't just be this wild and crazy movie about the clown prince of crime, in quotes, said Phillips. It would have to be some thematic resonance in a similar way that this does, because I think that's ultimately why the movie connected. It's what's going on underneath. So many movies are about the spark, and this is about the powder. If you could capture that again in a real way, that would be interesting.
Yeah.
Now, here's what Joaquin Phoenix has said about this previously. In the second, third week of shooting, I was like, Todd, can you start working on a sequel? There's way too much to explore, Phoenix said. It was kind of in jest, but not really. So basically, they've said, like, yeah, there's a lot more material to explore, but they would have to be, they don't want to lose what made this movie kind of unique as a departure from the comic book movie formula, just to, like, you know, then what? We're going to throw in a sequel, and it's like, Little Batman starts to come up, and like.
And this becomes just like a movie version.
Yeah, he builds a Joker gang, and then this guy named Oswald Peck comes in and starts.
But you know,
like,
what that reads to me?
Like,
that reads to me that, like, how I interpret that is Joaquin Phoenix wants a sequel. Todd Phillips doesn't necessarily want a sequel, but he's open to, if Joaquin blows him away with an idea, he'll be like, "Meh, okay." But that reads very much like he's kind of it's a little arm's length, and Joaquin is all about it. I feel like Joaquin.
I think that one of those guys is in much higher demand than the other.
You just hate Todd Phillips.
Like, I don't hate Todd Phillips. I don't think Todd Phillips is a very good filmmaker. I don't hate him. I just don't think he's good.
I think his filmmaking's crap. Like, yeah, I know.
I don't think he's good at his job. That doesn't mean I hate him.
Okay. Well, we're not here to assess Todd Phillips.
I will say
what was the last time there was we can disagree on Joker all we want, but we can agree that Todd Phillips made one other great
No, we can't.
Movie.
Stop lumping me in with anything you were about to say.
No, seriously.
Like, in general, don't
what,
do
What
that.
Would you consider Todd Phillips' great movie?
I think that The Hangover was a good kind of breakout for raunch comedy. I really like The Hangover 2. I think what he did producing, I thought Project X was a very kind of bold, forward-thinking kind of project for the time that it came out, which he produced. I didn't really love Due Date so much. As, I didn't think it was unfunny. I thought it was a little too cool.
Yeah, a lot of his movies are, you know, they're good.
But, like, I don't think, like, Todd Phillips, I love old school. Like, I love a lot of his old work.
I'm with you on that. The point I'm trying to make is that he made one movie that is, you know, revered as great and one movie that was an absolute hit. And that was The Hangover. And then what did he do with
it? Well, old school's a big cult hit.
Like, oh, yeah, big cult hit. But in terms of being one, you know, loved like that, but also a financial success,
I don't think Hangover was a
hit at the box office. I didn't say it was a failure, but I mean, a big hit. And The Hangover was that.
As far as
the demand, and then what happened
at this point?
And then what happened? What did he do with The Hangover franchise after this one great idea and great movie became a hit?
But what I will say, into the ground. What I will say, despite
you're blaming Todd Phillips.
Oh, I'm simply saying that he did this. That this happened before.
For running The Hangover.
We're talking about,
you don't think a movie studio had any say in this little raunch?
It's the same thing. Thing with Joker. It's like, oh, it made $1 billion. Make another one.
Which we said would happen. Which we said was always.
And we don't need. Look what happened last time he had to do that. It was terrible.
I mean, you can feel how you feel. I don't necessarily agree with
you. What I think is great, though? This would be a wonderful grenade for a few trips. It's like Kofi's take on Tim Miller and Charlie's take on Todd Phillips.
But, like, the difference is my take on Tim Miller is backed up by the utter failure of Terminator. Charlie's take on Todd Phillips is not backed up by success of
what
Joker.
I will say, though, is like you were saying, though, as far as like one is in demand, I would say that
you're looking over the filmography and you got Todd Phillips. I mean, you got Road Trip, you got Old School, you got War Dogs, you got The Hangover. So, I mean, like, the man has made some moderate hits. Like, and I think, like, just saying he only is like a one hit wonder, I don't know if that's true. I mean,
my point wasn't to say. I mean, I think he has one movie that's truly great. I think I like Old School. It's fine. I like Road Trip. It's fine. I'm not saying those are bad movies. I think The Hangover 2 and Hangover 3 are bad movies. I think Starsky and Hutch is a bad movie. I think War Dogs is not very good movie. But my point is, he had a hit, and whether it was his decision or the studios, was like, oh, well, now we have this thing. Let's milk it. And we saw what happened, and it did not go well. And now we're going to take Joker and do the same thing. And
said he doesn't want to do
that. Yeah, I don't think Phillips wants to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, did he say that before or after the $1 billion?
He's actually said that before,
I was wondering how recent those
comments were. I think you're discounting lessons learned. Like, after The Hangover, you haven't seen Todd Phillips, like, jump into a major franchise or make a thing. And I'm not defending him. I don't think he's the greatest guy, but I don't think any of that matters. Whether he's good or not, like, I think this is it's bigger than him now. Like, like we said, it's about Joaquin, it's about the studio. I personally don't think, as much as I love Joker, there needs to be a Joker 2.
Yeah.
Unless you're going to go and, I'm at that point now, like I said, way back when, unless you're going to spin this full on into, like, a larger DC universe type deal, then I don't need just a continued focused story about Arthur Fleck.
Well, and because no matter how you do it, you know, even coming from someone who doesn't like the movie, I think it really undercuts so much of the movie to continue the story, you know, because you can say, like you were talking about earlier, like, oh, it can be this adventure, a little Batman, like, that's silly. You can say, oh, it was a dream, and then we go into another dream, like, well, that kind of ruins the first one a little bit. It might have been you, Kobe, or it might have been JK. Somebody in the office the other day had an idea that I actually really liked, and it was make the Joker an anthology type of thing. You get a new actor and a new filmmaker and a totally different vision, and just, like, do a bunch of Joker movies because they're going to succeed, but just with totally different ideas and see what other people bring to the table and give them one movie and just have fun with it and make something crazy. And I really think that, like, that's a really fun idea.
Yeah, it is. But unfortunately, Hollywood doesn't make bets on, doesn't turn
away it's not gonna
sure
happen.
For repeated risk.
When you make a billion.
After Season of the Witch, we're not doing that anymore.
Yeah, but all right, we're going to keep you updated about this whole thing. Let us know. Do you guys want a joke or two? Hit us up at the hashtag ComicBookNation, and please let us know.
Do we even need a grenade now?
I mean, no, I don't think so, because I didn't think these were going to be such grenades. First, Frozen. Let's get something easy. Frozen 2 is coming down the pike. The first reviews and reactions to Frozen are now out as of today. Matt, take us through. People are saying it's better than the first in most cases, and some people are saying quite the opposite.
Well, okay, so, like, going through
it was
the
very
reviews,
weird.
Yeah, like there's no. Okay, so going through most of the reviews, I went through several.
Yeah, I've seen, like, I'm all over the place. I don't even know how to introduce this. I've seen some that are like, it's better than the first and even makes the first better.
But none of them are so, like, none of them are extreme. I have yet to see an extreme one that goes, it's terrible or it's great. When, it's all this weird, murky middle.
When the reactions came out after the premiere last week,
yeah,
there were people saying, this is better than the first one.
I remember
this movie's incredible. Frozen 2 is a masterpiece. Like it was wild.
So what's the difference between
but now the reviews are like
yeah,
all in the middle. A lot of them are like, well, it's fine. And the one thing is the music is really good and the animation is gorgeous, but it's like, but the story is kind of,
I've seen that the story, I've seen like, there are a couple reviews that point out that the story is more cohesive as a story than the first one. The story has more heart than the first one. The new songs with like Christoph and some of them are great. Like, so they keep pointing out all these positive things, and then their wrap up is like, it's like describing a movie as a 5, and then you give the movie a 3. It's weird.
That's a good thing, because I think the one that stuck out to me, it was like Frozen 2 is like leagues better than the first one, but not game changing. And I was like,
yeah, exactly. Like, why is it's weird?
Yeah, I was like, but Frozen was such a milestone that I feel like we're having like milestone withdrawal with this one.
Yeah,
it's like, this is just a movie, it's good, but the first one was like such a thing.
Yeah,
and like such a milestone event in Disney. You know, the tale of two sisters, not about the prince, the music.
And those songs, man. The songs go a long way.
There's almost no way that this movie is going to do what the first one
did.
Because the first one.
Yeah, like that song was not a song. It was a phenomenon.
It was a ballad. It was a moment.
Olaf as a character took over a ton of things. Elsa as a character. Like, there was so much fresh and new in that. But also, if you go back to look at reviews and look at, not even like full-on critic reviews, but just like user reviews and people on social media talking about Frozen, a lot of those people didn't get it at the time. There was a lot of like, what is everybody talking about this movie? It's fine. Like, there was a lot of that at the time. And as we've seen with other stuff and even things we'll get into later, like as time moves on, people remember things in a continued heightened sense. And so your love and appreciation for something, even if it started out just here in 2013, now you have this crazy high expectation, even if you didn't love it at the time. So I think that has a lot to do with it.
Frozen 2 is not woke enough. There you go.
There was one scene. There was a new clip from it, which I adored, by the way. And it's because Olaf again reminds how much of like a lovable jerk he is with some of the things he says. Like when he talks to Anna and he's like, you know, you're really old, so you must have all this like ancient knowledge. And he keeps calling her old throughout the entire conversation. And then he's like, man, I look forward to the day when I'm so old that I don't have to care about important things. He says something like that. Like, wow, that's such a jerk thing to say, but he's so lovable. He's a snowman.
I don't get any love for when I say those things. All right, so that'll do it. Frozen Horrible. 2. You can see our kind of collection of the first reviews on comicbook.com. All right, well, we're going to change things up a little bit because I did have a whole grenade topic, but then, you know, old Turnip over here made everything.
I mean, come bring it on. Like,
no need.
We don't necessarily have time, so we'll do it at the end if we have time. If not, we can save it for another episode. It's not a topic that's going anywhere. All right, so when we come back, we are going to deep dive into our review of Marvel's new X-Men spinoff, Fallen Angels. Tanner is going to tell us if we should be buying Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. So be sure to tune in for that.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/RS10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/RS10 today.
All right, so we're back, and we've come to the end of Marvel's Dawn of X relaunch with the release of Fallen Angels, the last of the six books in this first slate of Dawn of X reboots. And this one has been one that I think a lot of us were really excited for going in. It looked kind of exciting. It was all about Quanon. How do you say her name?
Quanon.
And, you know, Psylocke's Asian body.
Yeah.
The Asian assassin that Betsy Braddock,
yeah, yeah, come.
You know, inhabited for a while. Back in the 90s where you could do that kind of race switching stuff. Now that doesn't fly anymore. So, which is kind of hilarious for see them kind of tiptoe around that whole fact about about this character. But Quanon is the kind of the centerpiece of this book. But it's supposed to be about those people in the X-Men lore who don't quite fit in. It's trying to be X-Force, the Christopher, you know, whatever, Yost or whatever that was that did.
From the previous run?
Yeah.
Chris Yost and.
Yeah, before Uncanny X-Men. The Wolverine strike team, the Dark One, them and the Purifiers. Like, it's basically that again, except they're trying to make it deeper than that. So it's all these X-Men with like very troubled or violent pasts or not quite fitting in for some reason because so it's like the first issue is like it's Quanon who's had this body snatch thing with Psylocke that's left her kind of in a weird place. She's with the X-Men, but she's not. Cable, who is of course time displaced soldier, who's been through all kinds of crazy changes and is now like a teenage boy or whatever. And X-23, who's, as she says in her own words, is just looking to get out of Wolverine's shadow and become her own person instead of this Wolverine clone. So you think that would be a premise for a book, especially an intriguing one because of Krakoa and this new mutant nation and all the geopolitics we've already seen at play through these other books. But it turned out to be kind of boring. I mean, I think this was, for me, the weakest of the six books. Excalibur narrowly edges it out because Excalibur does have a slight element of whimsical fun to it, especially around the character of Apocalypse in that book, which we all loved and we're talking about. Apocalypse being an Excalibur is such a weird fit, but like it works so well because he has this knowledge of the ancient world. But Fallen Angels is it was just weird. I think the problem for me, speaking personally, is Quanon isn't a strong enough character to kind of center and hold this book, especially when you have characters with such deeper, richer X-Men lore surrounding her. Like Cable and X-23 are two of the biggest X-Men creations out of the main character set. They're two of the biggest additions that have gone on to grow to become two of the most iconic characters. So and they're playing second fiddle to this character, who again I don't think is interesting enough to ground a whole book.
I think they could be, any character it could be if they're written well enough. And that's the thing, is like I like seeing new characters and getting to know new characters, and it makes sense to have established ones around them, but this character is just not written very well at all. Like you're never given a real reason to care about it, and then it becomes what you said. Like it's because the character's not written in any interesting way. It's like, well, now I just want to see Cable and in X-23 because I'm
and
much
that's
more
like I think
that.
We said like that. I said to you and Matt JK, like I think it says something that the best scene for me in Fallen Angels was the weird kind of BDSM erotic play between Cable and X-23 where she's at a party. They're having a party at Krakoa, and Cable sees her sitting alone, and he's like, "Don't you want to dance?" And she's like, "That's not how I dance." And he's like, "Oh, how's that?" And she punches him and nearly breaks his nose. And
see, that's
weird,
so
sexy fight time or whatever.
It's so odd because that's one of my least favorite scenes. But it's because
it feels really out of place.
It sticks out to me. Because me and Jamie have talked, I'm actually I'm much higher on this book than a lot of people. And this book online, it seems to be, along with Excalibur, one of the most divisive. Like, you either kind of love it or you don't. It's very, there's not a lot of middle ground. And to me, it's actually, Mr. Sinister is, to me, the star of this particular issue, because every scene with him and Quanon is gold for me. I love the back and forth. And the thing is, Quanon does have the history as Psylocke that these other characters don't. And so, like, when they pitched it as a Psylocke book, I mean, Psylocke has had her own miniseries before. And the thing they always kind of struggle with is to define her personality. I think the whole point of this book is to find that. I think Brian Hill can. This issue is still trying to find that rhythm a little bit. A lot of it has to do with her past, the daughter angle. Oh, by the way, we should talk spoilers, but this is Friday's show, so it's fine because it came out on Wednesday. Spoilers, by the way. But when they reveal that, you know, she has a daughter, and they start to go into, like, her name is a shackle and some of those other things, I think he's finding little pieces, little nuggets of interesting character parts of her. So I think in a couple issues time, this could be a great showcase for the character. I think it's still trying to find its rhythm. It's not my favorite in the Dawn of X books by far, but I actually really enjoy this. And I also think, I mean, one of the other arguments has been X-23 and the handling of her. I haven't been a fan of the handling of X-23 since All New Wolverine ended. Because to me, this line where she's like Logan's shadow, like, Jamie hated that line. And I get it from someone who has seen Laura. Like, we love where Laura was with Tom Taylor and All New Wolverine in that book. It was moving that character up while Logan was away. And that was supposed to be the idea. She was supposed to be Wolverine for years. And then Logan was supposed to come back and she would have already been defined. Instead, we got a Batman Dick Grayson situation where they brought Batman back in a year. Dick Grayson doesn't get to be Batman anymore. And that character then has to go on a honey expedition for the next 4 years to find their character again. That happened to Laura. And in her own solo series, they kind of started to bring her back towards this. I think this will be an exploration over the next couple issues of finding Laura as a character again outside of Logan, which X-Force books in the past have always put them, sandwiched them together. They are one, their daughter and father. So I think this is going to be, by the end of this, I think we will see some really interesting things. This was, to me, a good issue. I enjoyed it. But I think it will get better in time, and this will be the weakest of those.
I think I see a lot of the appeal that you're talking about. I disagree in the sense that I think that there's some tricks you learn, you know, you come up and you learn about writing and storytelling, and there's some tricks you learn, and there's also ways to spot tricks you're supposed to avoid. Like, and I feel like right now we're kind of using a lot of distractionary tricks because we don't know how to crack the core of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should have spent a lot more time getting to know Quanon and her past and explaining how she became this assassin and why the way she is if she's not, like, doesn't have, even why she doesn't have that much of a personality.
Yeah.
Because it was beaten out of her, like, and trained out of her. But now you've thrown in this whole daughter angle, and it's just like, now we're going to define Quanon by this whole other character thing of a caring mommy and concerned woman about this stuff and, like, all of that. And it's like, we don't know. I hung out with you at Psylocke and I knew you.
Yeah.
I don't know you now, man. Like, yeah. And your family squabbles aren't as interesting to me. Because I don't care about you as a character yet.
Yeah.
So just kind of trying to pull on my emotional strings with the daughter angle doesn't quite work. And I also don't think that one of the biggest things I didn't like about this issue is the scene where Quanon and X-23 hunt down that lead about her daughter.
Oh, you didn't like that?
No, I don't think, because they're so similar in their stories and where they are, like, right now in the X-Men universe in this unsure place, their personalities are a lot alike.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they know. I think somebody, it becomes kind of artificial when they're together. Like, in that scene, I feel like X-23 stops being X-23 to be, like, somebody more like Storm or Jean Grey or somebody like a more verbal side, like a partner or support system. Like, I don't think X-23 would be like, hey, what are we doing here? Like, you know, are we doing this? Like, but, like, that didn't feel like Laura to me. It felt like Laura had to be that because the role
because
of
Psylocke
angry,
is,
quiet, like, you know, volatile killer was already taken. Like,
that's where it'll be interesting to see where this book is in a couple issues, because that Laura is the Laura I grew to love in Wolverine. But since then, that character has kind of slowly come back more towards the X-Force, more silent, kind of let things. I liked the playful side and the more talked about side from that, but she hasn't been that for a minute. So yeah, it'll be interesting
and
to
I
see
think
where this
it'll
lands.
Be great if they nail this character dynamic between the central players. Like, if Laura takes on a role that you know, convincingly, because Quan is so unbalanced and is, like, so crazy, and Laura's like, I got to be the less crazy one here. Like,
yeah.
And begins to kind of boss up and be more Wolverine-ish. Like, that'll be interesting to see. I think it was just too much in this first issue to kind of cram together that I'm not sold there yet. I am sold on the sinister angle, obviously. Like those scenes and his dialogue. So,
he's such a manipulative,
Krakoa is just like the snake in the garden. It's just really wonderful, right?
And now, that Magneto sequence back and forth is great too.
That was actually really good. That was actually probably my favorite scene in the book, is Magneto, like his double speak of saying without saying, like, yeah, go break the rules, but I'm not going to say that, like, because I'm Magneto and my laws are unbendable.
And this team will get two more characters within the next like three issues. One being Bling and the other one I don't remember off the top of my head, but I think Husk. It'll be interesting to see what those two Bling characters Husk. Are. I mean, look, what House and Powers have shown is that what have we seen? We've seen all these characters that have been looked at as also Rands.
You know given what? Life. And if Jonathan Hickman was writing it, characters named Bling and Husk sound great.
Brian Hill, I love his Angel. His Angel series is great.
I've liked Brian Hill in the past.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not going to discount it just because he's writing.
And Hickman's also has a controlling hand.
Yeah.
So, like,
the big thing here, though, like, that I think you're both right in what you're talking about with the book. I wasn't a big fan either. But I think the thing that really got me that I had a really hard time with was this book just doesn't look very appealing. It's very, like, early 2000s with that like shiny, like dark oil look. And it's like, I don't know how to describe it. Like there's old X-Men books that are just discounted because they're bad and we don't like them.
Yeah.
They're like, it all seems from that era, but like there's not a real setting at any point. It all seems like it just takes place in darkness. And it's a bunch of like weird close-ups on different parts of your face to show that you're
the
angry.
The close-ups weirded me out at one point.
It's such a strangely laid out and illustrated book.
During that conversation with Magneto, there was one panel where it's like closes like up on her lips. Yeah, and I'm like, this is the weirdest panel.
But they lose everything behind them and it's just like,
I mean, I don't know how we want to get into this, but there's a weird sexual element to this whole House of X thing. Like, every book has to have some kind of sexual innuendo between characters that's twisted.
Nothing's as good as the whole Cyclops and Jean Grey and Wolverine have
adjoined bedrooms. Yeah, this whole Psylocke conversation.
There's a lot of that.
Like, look, like what's, where even are they?
That's the one. That's the one I was talking about. I was like, that is a weird panel.
Yeah, it's so like, it's darkness. And it's very like,
though, as far as tone, but I'm not, like, if I had a choice of visual style, that is not my choice of visual. I definitely prefer. Yeah, some of
a
the,
lot of it is a lot
I mean, and
faces,
books can be
shadows.
Dark in color. Like, that's fine. It doesn't do it very well, and it focuses on strange things like that.
All
like
close-ups.
Teeth.
Yeah, I mean, so many close-ups. Wrong. It is all close-ups faces in the dark, and there is
something
pervasive dark.
I love that scene, though. That scene where she's it is a pops weird the claws on the other. Oh, my God.
Especially when the cover was so, like, Blade Runner colors almost, and it's like where is all that? Like, where's all that neon and like that? Those tones.
I don't know, but we're still split. So, real quick before we got to throw it over to Tanner, how would you guys rank your your Dawn of X launches?
Oh,
Let's just say, let me see.
That's hard.
Can I even do mine?
I don't know if I can rank them, but I can.
I need prep.
I think we all love the regular X-Men series.
Number two was just okay. Let's talk about that real quick. So, X-Men number two. It was a real letdown for me, too.
Did that come out this week?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How did I miss that?
We all did. It's nothing. It's not generating anything. It's kind of a letdown. Yeah, okay. I mean, they moved like the big first piece of mythology with this Araco stuff from
that
House
part was
X.
Cool. That stuff was interesting.
But even that book has like an island having sex with another island.
Yeah,
so,
I know.
Like,
boy, Hickman.
Every
got
one of these books have to have it.
That's true.
Regardless of that, like, so I like the first issue, but Marauders has been my favorite.
Marauders is up there for me. Yeah, definitely. I think, oddly enough, I think the more irreverent ones like Marauders and New Mutants were kind of at the top for me. Underneath that would be X-Men, would be actually X-Force and X-Men. And then at the bottom would be Excalibur and then Fallen Angels for me.
Yeah, I think mine looks pretty similar. It's Marauders at the top. It's probably... It's between X-Force, it's probably X-Force and then New Mutants, and then, you know, we kind of go down the line. X-Men is probably, X-Men is kind of towards the bottom for me. I found Fallen Angels more interesting than I did X-Men.
Mm. The second
just issue? Just because it's interesting.
Because the first issue, I mean, having not read the second issue, X-Men's probably my second favorite to Marauders, but... Again, I haven't read...
No, but even the first issue of X-Men, if I think back on it, the thing I remember the most, as much as I love Cyclops, I mean, everyone knows I'm a Cyclops fiend, but as much as I love that character, aside from, like, the Vulcan moments and things like that, there's not a lot that I remember. It's forgettable.
Like Hitman did this whole thing with House of X and Powers of X, where it was just so much of moving macro pieces of the board around. And it was like what he was accused of not really connecting to the characters, just playing with the mythos, not really doing the characters. That X-Men so far feels almost like overcompensation.
The opposite, yeah.
Like, it's just like, we're going to do slice of life stories for the X-Men every day. And it's like, it was cool to see that as a sampling in the first issue, but eventually you do have to jump into a storyline that.
And I think that's where Marauders really excels.
Yeah.
Because right off the bat, Marauders has really, really compelling characters and a really awesome hook of a story. Like, you're going to put Kitty Pryde on a pirate ship, finding mutants that didn't make it to Krakoa. That's the whole point of the book.
Yeah,
that is so much fun.
Yeah,
yeah, it really is. So yeah,
X-Force really raised the stakes with the whole human group, the Strike Force, the Return of the Reavers, attack on Krakoa, massacre.
Surprised to how much I love X-Force.
So this stuff looks good, but upcoming issues look like they could flip the script very much. We've seen solicits for this. We know that like in X-Men 4, it's like Magneto, Apocalypse, and Xavier go to a geopolitical summit.
Yeah, that's
like,
gonna be.
And they're all in business suits, and it's like, okay, that's crazy. I want to see that. But so we'll keep you updated on Dawn of X. This has been our run. We've done the House Powers and now the first line, but we'll keep you guys updated with some regular updates. If you let us know what you guys are feeling about these new era of the X-Men, hit us up at the hashtag Comic Book Nation. Now we're going to close out the show with Tanner, who's been patiently waiting over here in the cut. Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order is going to be out by the time you hear this. Or is it? Or
is it?
Yes,
it
is.
November 15th, so yeah, it'll be
out. Yeah, it'll be here when you hear this. Tanner. It's a guy who kind of his happiness lives and dies by some of these Star Wars games, depending on how good or not they are, and they've been all over the place. Where does Fallen Order land?
No pressure.
Just the quick answer, should you buy it or not? Yes, you should absolutely buy Fallen Order. It doesn't matter like how big of a Star Wars fan you are, because I will say, like, you love Star Wars. I'm a very casual Star Wars fan. Like, I've seen all the movies, you know, but if you asked me to like put them all in order, I'd have to like look at it for a minute, you know. But this is a really, really good game. But the good thing about it is, like, it's a good game without being a Star Wars game. If you stripped away all the Star Wars parts, it's still an incredible game. The other side of that is, like, the Star Wars actual story is kind of, it's okay. It's okay. I think part of the problem that it has with it is that if you look at the timeline, so I don't know how much everyone knows about it, but it stars, you know, Cal Kestis, and he's a Padawan who survived Order 66, so he has to go in hiding, right? He has to save himself. Yeah. Eventually, he gets pulled out of hiding, and he's on the run from the Empire. But it takes place before the events of Rogue One, because you see, what's that guy in Rogue One? Saul Guerrero, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in this game, and it's his actor.
Whitaker.
Yeah, Forrest Whitaker. He's playing. He does a really great job with him. So you see him, and it's that kind of sets, you know, where it is in the timeline. The problem that it has as a Star Wars story is, because it falls between those two things, it can't really do a whole lot of, I guess, consequential or like very impactful moments in the story, because Cal's whole mission is he wants to rebuild the Jedi Order, right? He tells you that from the beginning of the story. So, I mean, if you've seen the movies, you know, like, he tells you what he wants to do.
And I'm like, at this point, you know, there are no Jedi. They're all in hiding.
Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, he thinks he's the last. Everyone thinks they're the last Jedi, right? So he wants to rebuild the Jedi Order. So you kind of have to go into it with like a suspension of belief, like, you know, you have to be willing to accept, okay, he's going to rebuild the Jedi Order, right? So
he's
from that,
fail or just know the whole time he's not going to, and like, let that darkness sit in you the whole time.
And you know, the whole thing, like, it does develop in a great way, the way that he tries to do it. You know, this, I'm not going to spoil anything that happens, because it is a really good, the way the story plays out. But, you know, from a Star Wars perspective, that kind of does limit what Respawn can do here, right? Yeah. You can't have someone blow up a planet, because then you got to explain that in the other movies, and you can't have someone, you know, chop off someone's hand, because how are you going to explain that in another
movie?
Is
the game considered canon?
The game is considered canon, yeah.
Your hands are pretty tight.
And you see the way they worked around it, because, like, Cal was a brand new character, and the people that he teams up with that are on his ship, like, there's Sarah and his little droid BD-1 that follows him around everywhere, they're all brand new, too. So they kind of work around it that way, you know, they're all brand new characters. So for someone like me, who's not as invested in, you know, everything to do with Star Wars, that's really easy for me to get used to, because I don't have to look up who's this guy. You don't feel like you're missing
you
out
the wiki
anything.
Hunt.
and it sounds like, you listen to you guys talk about it, like, they brought in a lot of instead of relying on the movies, they brought in a lot of comic characters and comic mythology, like, from the
you see in the trailers that, you know, he's being hunted by the Inquisitors and the Purge Troopers the whole time, and you see in the trailer the second sister shows up, who is in the comics, and there's the ninth sister who is like this huge, you know, hulking former Jedi that you have to fight. And you see all these guys in the trailer, so this isn't spoiling anything, but they do pull from, I guess, like the not the main line, you know, not the main movies. They pull from like the areas around those things to build on it. So I guess you could consider them more minor characters. So it's, I mean, but for me, that's nice because I'm not missing out on anything. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like.
Sounds like it's good for newcomers, but also for like people like me who read some, like a lot of the comics, the books, read them, watched the animated series of that era. Like there will be Easter eggs and stuff.
Right. And there's fun things like that. Like you come across some stormtroopers at some point. And this is in a trailer too. So I'm not, you know, again, I'm not spoiling anything. You come across some stormtroopers and they say, you know, you overhear their conversation because you're sneaking around. And they say something like, well, at least we have the high ground here. So it's, you know, fun stuff like that. Yeah. You're like, okay.
So from watching the trailer, just, you know, I don't want to keep, you know, interrupting or whatever, but like, one thing that I've been curious about is how the game actually plays, because it there's times it feels almost like an Uncharted type of thing where it's like here's it like there's a clear narrative story you're playing with, and at other times it kind of you know, I'm a big fan of Neo and it's a lot of like it focuses on fight mechanics and it seems like there's a lot of, you know, fighting like really specific fight elements to the game. Like how does it play compared to some other stuff we've played
with? So I've heard like a lot of different comparisons to games. Even the people that made the game, they compared it to everything from that new Sekiro Shadows Die Twice that was from the guys who made Dark Souls. And they also compared it to like Legend of Zelda, which was weird for a Star Wars game. But it's because of like the way that you have to fight is, you know, he's recovering from the events of Order of 66. So you don't have all your force powers in the beginning of the game. You have to you have to get those back. You know, he's basically overcoming PTSD, you know, through these challenges, and he has to get his powers back. And that was one thing that I wasn't sure if I would like, because, like, I mean, you call me crazy, but I didn't really want to play as a Jedi in a game because they're, like, super overpowered, and you're just going to mow down everything. So I thought, why is that? That's not fun. That's not a challenge. But that's how they present it as a challenge. You don't have all your powers yet. You got to get them back. So pretty much you just start out with the lightsaber, and he has the ability to slow down time, which is apparently a pretty rare Jedi power. So you have those limited tools. But as far as the combat goes, I would say the combat definitely takes a lot from that Sekiro Shadows Die Twice game. It's a lot like God of War, too. If you guys like the 2018 God of War game, this is going to be a lot of fun. The way that you have to explore everything is you always find like bridges, things like that you can't get through. And then you realize if I learn a force power later, I can come back here. So it's like a lot of back and forth of, you know, progress through a story, go back and visit the planet,
is
go
like
through
an
a story.
Open world thing?
It's a what?
It's like an open world type of thing?
It's actually open multiple worlds because you travel between planets. But it's like it's kind of open world in the sense that, you know, there's a very linear path. You have a map that says here's your objective, go to there. But there are a lot of branching, you know, doors you can open, secrets you can uncover, things like that. So it's more of a linear, you know, it's definitely a narrative game, but it gives you some wiggle room to work around. The thing I love most about it, like I said, game, Star Wars story or not, the game is great because the combat, you absolutely have to master the combat to do this with your lightsaber. It really makes you feel like you're actually playing as a Jedi because you have to parry people all the time. When you fight other Jedis, those are the best fights in the game. I get so hyped every time I had to fight one of those. I wish the game had like some kind of a boss rush mode so you can go back and, you know, fight them again. I would beat the Purge Troopers and go back and respawn, because whenever you sit down at a little meditation circle, it respawns the enemies, kind of like Dark Souls, brings them all back. So I would go respawn them again just so I go back and fight it, because I was like, no, I didn't get it right that time. We're going to do it again. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, you definitely – yeah, Jim said you live and die by the parry, and – he's absolutely right. It gets pretty hard at times. But one thing I will say is good about the difficulty for Star Wars fans is that if you – like, I don't know. What do y'all usually play your difficulty on?
Hard.
Okay. Hard?
It depends on the kind of game.
Like first time through is normal, and then I'd go back.
I put mine on – there's four different difficulties. I put mine on the second hardest one. I think it's called Jedi Master, and the hardest one is Jedi Grandmaster. And I was like, well, we'll just go Jedi Master for this one. But there's a story difficulty, which makes it – I don't want to say makes it easy, because someone might still have a little bit of a challenge with it, but it's like if you want to just see the story and you're a Star Wars fan, but you're not really, you know, a big gamer and you don't want to miss out on anything, just put on the story mode. You know, enemies are way less aggressive. You don't have to parry as much. So that one would be a lot easier.
Sounds like Guillermo Cuffy.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much.
All right. Basically, it's real accessible for everyone. It's an accessible game, Star Wars fan or not. You're going to get something out of it.
So, final word again. We should be checking this game out. I mean, because there's a lot of games out right now.
Yeah, because Pokemon comes out at the same time Star Wars does, and we got more, but yeah.
Modern Warfare is out. Like, yeah. If I have to choose between Modern Warfare and Fallen Order, what should I pick?
I think Modern Warfare would give you, like, long, you would get more out of Modern Warfare in the long run, but EA has had a bad run with their Star Wars games. So if you've been waiting for like a single player Star Wars game, you need to get this.
This is it.
This is it. This All is, right. It's a redeeming game.
All right, Tanner, thank you for taking time out for your busy gaming new schedule, which is happening right now, to talk about this with us. That'll do it for this episode of Comic Book Nation. If you are just now getting into the show, we drop new episodes every Wednesday and every Friday. People seem pretty good about getting the Friday episode, but don't forget that Wednesday episode when Janelle Wheeler's here and helps me and Matt try to muddle through the nightmare craziness of the middle of the week. Those are always great, so be sure to go back and check those out. You can always subscribe to Comic Book Nation by looking at our articles on comicbook.com, where we have a subscription to our RSS feed, or you can subscribe through your favorite listening platform for podcasts. You can do iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Google Playlists. You can tell your Amazon Alexa device to play Comic Book Nation podcast and it'll fire up, or you can find us on the YouTube under the comicbook.com YouTube page. If you want to continue the discussion or get in on any of these grenade arguments or General Charlie arguments, you can find us at the hashtag Comic Book Nation, or you can find me at Kofi Outlaw.
You can find me at Matt Aguilar CB.
And I'm at Charlie Ridgely.
And I'm at Tanner Dedman.
Yeah, there you go. Tanner's over there. He threw in his plug. Get that plug, Tanner.
I'm here. Come talk about games.
All right. Comicbook.com/gaming. All right, that'll do it for us. We are out of here. If you guys are fans of the show, be sure to leave those 5-star reviews on iTunes because we will be back soon. We have almost cleaned out our t-shirt shipment.
Yeah, buddy. More reviews.
Our shipment queue for t-shirts is almost cleared out, which means it's time for more t-shirts. So be sure to leave those 5-star iTunes reviews so we can read them on the air and send you a t-shirt. That'll do it for us. Thank you guys for tuning in, as always, to our nearly 100 episodes of Comic Book Nation. We're going to get out of here now. Peace.
Deuces.